Good evening. I know it was a combination of jet lag and just getting back in the groove of things that Jeffer said, if you're prepared, go ahead and speak. But part of me wonders if it's because he didn't want to follow up a preacher that feeds people. How are you going to compete with that? I can't even get my wife to look over my lessons before I preach them. How do you get your wife to bake a loaf of bread for the church? I don't know. I hadn't figured that one out yet. Maybe it's a generational thing. But I'm happy to be here with you, happy for this opportunity. She's a saint, that's all I got to say. So Mark opened the door for this anytime someone opens up the window of an opportunity to tell a story about my grandmother, I'm going to do it. And you just got to suffer through it. I'm sorry. But I was thinking a lot about this lesson tonight, and Jeffer combined chapters 21 and 22 together, and he titled it Trust Issues. And so it made me kind of think outside of the box a little bit. I could talk to you about how in Genesis that chapter 22, that's the first time the word love is used in the Old Testament. And it's in reference to a father's love for his son, Abraham and Isaac. And we could look over in Matthew chapter 3 and see how that's the first time love is used in the New Testament in reference to a father's love to his son, God and Jesus. We could go through the story of Isaac and Abraham and the offering, and we could bring out the many parallels, which I believe that was one of the primary purposes of it, to parallel the sacrifice that would be given for us and as a foreshadowing of that. But with this idea of trust issues, it kind of started getting my wheels turning a little bit. And I know that my thoughts are biblical tonight. I just hope that I can get my thoughts into words properly. I really do. I've struggled with that through this. And it just kind of got to the point where you just kind of have to say, we're going to try this. My wife will tell you that I'm my own worst enemy. I'm very bad about comparing different aspects of my life to others. I compare myself as a husband to other husbands. I compare myself as a father to other fathers. I compare myself as a Christian to other Christians. And I say to myself, man, I wish I had their strength, or I wish I had their faith, and I wish I had this, and I wish I had that. And while there's not necessarily always a bad thing that comes from that, Paul himself says, you know, if you're going to imitate anyone, imitate me as I imitate Christ Jesus. So only imitate me, Paul says, as long as I'm imitating Christ. If I'm imitating anyone else, he says, don't even fool with it. But I've learned that along the way that, one, sometimes we set people up on pedestals in their faith when one, they don't desire to even be put on that pedestal. And two, our lives are oftentimes like social media. You see what I want you to see. You see me when I'm that outstanding husband or when I'm that outstanding father or Christian, because that's what I put out there for the world to see. But you don't get to see the inner struggles. You don't get to see the inner challenges or the exterior challenges that I face throughout the day. Many, though, what we see is an amazing representation of who they truly are. But what we fail to, I guess, think about is the time, the effort, the circumstances that they went through in life that got them to that point. I used to always get frustrated as a kid. I always wanted to take one of my students' starting positions at point guard. And I couldn't understand why he was so much better than me. And I'd always compare myself to him. And then one day my dad looked at me while I was sitting in the living room and he said, that's why he's better than you. I said, what? He said, while you're sitting here, he said, that kid every night shoots 100 free throws and makes 100 before he goes inside. That kid is always practicing, always getting better, and you're sitting in the house. I never took the kid's starting position because the kid was willing to put in that effort that I couldn't see to get to that level of skill. When I think about comparing myself to people, when I think about people's level of their faith, there's many times Because I used to always be called, because in a lot of ways, I'm like my father and my mother, but there's a lot of ways that I'm so much like my grandmother because I spent so much time with her. And people used to always tell me, oh, you act so much like Janie Collins. You're like a male version of Janie Collins. And I kept saying to myself, what are you talking about? That faith isn't there. It's not even close to her faith. In fact, when I think about the day, the visitation, the day of her funeral, she was the first funeral I ever held. And I think about how many people came up to me. See, Mark said she sounds like a spitfire. She's the furthest thing from a spitfire, actually. She's the quietest person you would have ever met. Very humble, or as we say in Jackson County, humble. She used to call it humble. I thought it was humble. And then I got to college and people started making fun of me for saying humble. But it's the H isn't silent, okay? It's humble. But she had an infectious laugh. She had an infectious smile. But she also had this compassion for people, this care for people. And I think about the many people's lives that were impacted by her. I think about how the funeral home was overflowing with people and the stories that I would hear. And more times than not, the stories would always go back to something with her faith. And so as I was going through this lesson, thinking about Abraham and thinking about the faith that it would take Abraham to trust in God to the extent of being willing to put his son on an altar, I started thinking about my grandmother. And you're like, how did you get there? Well, let me explain to you how I got there. You see, I started thinking about my grandmother's faith towards the end of her life and what I saw as a child. But then I started thinking about many of the stories that I heard about, one, her upbringing. Originally, her biological father was an alcoholic. He died when she was younger in age. My great-grandmother, married a mechanic in Junkard in Jackson County who was a larger-than-life figure to me when I think about him. Big old man. Bennett Locke, big old man. And Bennett always treated her as if she was his own biological daughter. But then I think about a woman who married at a young age, dropped out of school. I never would have guessed that my grandmother didn't receive her high school diploma. Got married at a young age, starts a family of three kids, and man, does that man put her through the ringer. Doesn't know if he's coming home, doesn't know what he's doing, the emotional abuse that she suffered throughout that, the stress of basically raising three children not very far in age on her own. But she got them to church. She made sure, along with the help of her mother and father, that they were fed, that they were clothed. I think about all the different struggles in her life. I think about the health issues that she dealt with. I remember as a kid around one of my first memories of when she was, I don't know if she was diagnosed with it at this point, had been, but in my mind she was diagnosed, and my mom may correct me on it. But I think about how she was constantly in pain with fibromyalgia, how there were days she couldn't walk, days that it took everything just to get out of bed to go to the bathroom. But she still made it to church. And you see, later on in life, I thought she was no longer in pain. She did a great job hiding it. And then someone, and I can't remember, I think I remember who it was that said it, but you know how it is when you're at a funeral home, it begins to blur who all talks to you. But I remember someone said, you know, she was always in so much pain, but she made sure to hide it because she made sure she wanted you to be able to be in church. Let that sink in for a second. Somebody that's willing to go through so much physical pain, can barely walk, can barely move. You see, I saw the finished product of her faith. What I didn't see is what it took to get from point A to point B. And so many times in life, I compare my faith to people that have went through so much to get there. And I fail to realize that, guess what? You're on this journey to get there. It doesn't happen overnight. And it's not easy. It takes work. When I think about Genesis 22, I can't help but think about Genesis 20. Genesis 20 records another failure of Abraham to trust in the Lord. You see, we think of Abraham at the pinnacle of his faith. And we'll get there in a moment. But oftentimes we forget what it took to get there. What it took to get there. In Genesis 20, Abraham lies about Sarah being his sister rather than trusting God to deliver them. Rather than revoking God's promises, God, though, continues throughout this to be faithful to his word to Abraham. Abraham and Sarah will bear this miracle child in Isaac, and Ishmael is provided for in the desert after he's sent away. God's prior faithfulness to Abraham is what opens the scene to Genesis 22. But before we get there, I want you to think about what it took to get there in the beginning, in the starting point. In Genesis chapter 15, beginning with verse 2, you see, the thing about God's story, the thing about God's plan for our lives, the thing about getting to that level of faith that Abraham had, and here's the thing, I believe it's 100% achievable. Because Abraham was no different than you and I. Abraham was a man just like you and I. In Genesis 15, beginning with verse 2, Abram replied, "O sovereign Lord, what good are all your blessings when I don't even have a son?" He goes on to say, "You've given me no descendants of my own, so one of my servants will be my heir." Then the Lord said to him, "No, your servant will not be your heir, for you will have a son of your own who will be your heir." God's promises to Abraham didn't materialize right away. And Abraham would go through many ups and many downs, many highs, many lows, many moments where he was pleasing to God, and many moments where he had to be wondering, why did I make the same mistake again? I knew better. I did this before. Why did I do the same thing twice? But the thing about it is, the road to God's purpose will always involve delays, obstacles, and tests. And it's easy to doubt what God will do. But the thing about His plan usually becomes more clear over time. You see, that's the thing about providential care. That's the thing about God's providence. It never looks forward, it always looks backwards. I may not know what God is ultimately doing in a current situation, and I may think I have it figured out that God's going to do this, and then it takes a complete 180. But then I look back 10, 15, 20, 30 years in the past, and it all fits together like this perfect puzzle. And I see where God was at work, where God's hand was in it through it all, through the highs, through the lows. In verse 8 of Genesis chapter 15, it says, "O sovereign Lord, how can it be that I will actually possess it?" Abraham wonders, you know, "God, you've made this promise for me that I'm going to bear a son, but you've made this promise that my children are going to outnumber those of the stars. How can it be? How can I secure this promise? How can I actually possess it?" And in response to verse 8, God bound himself to his promise through a covenant. Covenants were common in the ancient world. A covenant was like a treaty ensuring faithfulness between two parties. Both parties pledged to fulfill certain conditions. As God moved from promise to covenant, it was like reinforcing a handshake agreement with a written contract. In verse 8 of Genesis 15, or verse 18 of Genesis 15, "So the Lord made a covenant with Abram that day and said, 'I have given this land to your descendants all the way from the border of Egypt to the great Euphrates River.'" You know what I think's interesting? Most contracts, treaties, or to use the terminology here in Genesis 15, covenants, they were bilateral, meaning I'll give you this, but you do this in return. This one was unilateral. I don't see the conditions placed on Abraham. God pledged his faithfulness to Abraham. But I don't see God asking anything in return. And you say, what do you mean? Abraham had to be faithful. Yeah, but here's the thing. How many times throughout this spiritual journey was Abraham unfaithful? And yet, what did God remain? Faithful. God remained faithful to Abraham even when Abraham wasn't faithful. Even when Abraham decided to lean on his own understanding in situations, God still remained faithful to Abraham in these circumstances. You see, our part in this, just as Abraham's part throughout all of this, was one task. And that was simply to just keep trusting me. Just continue to trust God, Abraham, throughout all of this. You know what God has promised you. You know that God is going to fulfill this. Just keep trusting Him. Just keep doing it His way. Because you already know what the outcome is. If you look back in Genesis chapter 15 and verse 6, and Abram believed the Lord, and the Lord counted him as righteous because of his faith. Abraham's faith became a model for a relationship with God. And that carries over to you and I today. So how did Abraham get to this point in Genesis 22? Simply, it takes a lifetime. It takes a lifetime of highs and lows. It takes a lifetime of faithfulness. It takes a lifetime, though, of also making mistakes along the way and learning not only from your successes, but learning from your mistakes. I was watching a show today. I don't know why, but I've gotten this sudden interest in Vikings. I just think it's the manliest of people, right? And I guess that's where the beard is twofold. One, I feel like a Viking, and two, I'm going bald. So if the Lord's going to take the hair on the top of my head, I'm going to keep some hair on my head. But in this show, there was a young prince who becomes king as a young boy. Kind of last minute thing. His father passes. And they tell him, don't do this because it's going to be a failure. And you need to learn from us. You need to learn from our past mistakes. And the king looks at them so bold, emboldened, and he says, I would rather learn from my successes. But the problem, that sounds great and all, but the problem is we often learn more from our failures than our successes. If we're real students about life, we learn more from the times that we fail, or should, than that of our successes. So Abraham gets to this point of this unconditional trusting in God, this faithfulness, through learning from many highs and many lows. We're all familiar with the story, and we're going to look at kind of the Cliff Notes version of it in Hebrews 11 for time's sake tonight. But we're all familiar with the story of Abraham and Isaac. How Abraham was willing to take his son with him, and how he was willing to bind his son, and how he was willing to put his son on an altar. And his son asked, Dad, where's the sacrifice? And Abraham's response was, the Lord will provide. And Abraham didn't just wait around for the Lord to provide. Abraham drew his sword and was ready to fulfill what the angel asked of him. And the angel of the Lord stops him. And there is provided a ram to be offered in Isaac's place. I think about, though, in Hebrews chapter 11, the Hebrew author gives us some divine commentary here. He says, by faith, verse 8, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in the tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to a city that has a foundation, whose designer and builder is God. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man and him as good as dead, were born descendants, as many as the stars of heaven, and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. These all died in faith. All died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar. Skipping down to verse 17, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. And he considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. You see, this is where Hebrews 11 uses the same phrasing that is used in Genesis 22, that the Lord was testing Abraham with this, putting his faith to the test to see if his faith was there. And here's the thing, I believe the Lord already knew. The Lord knows the hearts of men and women. But I believe we need to know it. We need to know what our faith is capable of. It's a great feeling when you accomplish something that you thought you never could accomplish. I'm listening to an audiobook called Extreme Leadership. Ownership. Extreme Ownership. The gentleman's name, that the main author's name is Jocko. He's a former Navy SEAL. He was the main official that was overseeing all the Navy SEAL units in Ramadi during Iraq. And he said he learned so many lessons about ownership, in his time in the SEALs, that he said, I've seen how this can correlate over into business, how it can correlate into family life. He even uses it. Missionaries, he said, have used it in the mission fields as a tool to teach them how to be better leaders throughout all of these situations. But he was talking about BUDS. BUDS is where you go when you aspire to be a Navy SEAL. BUDS is torture, they say. Never been there. Couldn't handle it. I know I couldn't. But he said one of the things that was interesting about BUDS is it wasn't always the most fit individuals that survived. He said, in fact, if you took a unit of 100, you might keep 40. 160-ish of them will usually go and ring the bell 3 times, which means I'm done, get me home. I can't do it. He says, what it is it's not so much. He's like, look, all of these guys, all 100, have the physical capability to do this. They've already proven that, or they wouldn't be here in the first place. He said, but what BUDS is for is not to just prove how physically strong you are, but how mentally strong you are. And how you can push your mind and your body further than you ever thought it was imaginable. And sometimes I think we need that with our faith. I mean, you think about it, church. Jesus says if you have faith that's the size of a mustard seed, you can say to a mountain, go and be moved, and it'll be moved. Or you can go to a sycamore tree and you can say, be uprooted, and it'll be uprooted. Jesus is saying, you've only tapped into just a small portion of what your faith can do. What it can do. But you see, it all boils down to this one word, trust. Trusting in God that He will come through, that He will accomplish what He has promised. God used the trials and the tests that Abraham went through up to this point, the failures and the successes, to strengthen the faith of Abraham, to mold Abraham. I think one of the most beautiful imageries of God in Scripture is in Jeremiah 18. Jeremiah 18. Jeremiah 18, beginning with verse 1, the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord, arise, go down to the potter's house, and there I'll let you hear my words. So I went down to the potter's house, and there he was, working at his wheel. And the vessel he was making of clay was spoiled in the potter's hand, and he reworked it into another vessel as it seemed good to the potter to do. Then the word of the Lord came to me, O house of Israel, can I not do with you as this potter has done, declares the Lord. Behold, like the clay in the potter's hand, so are you in my hand. O house of Israel, if at any time I declare concerning a nation or a kingdom that I will pluck up and break down and destroy it, and if that nation concerning which I have spoken turns from its evil, I will relent of the disaster that I intended to do to it. You see, the whole purpose of this is, look, if a potter can take clay, and a potter has this image in his mind, what that clay wants to be. But the thing about it is, if you're molding clay, which I did a little bit of that, they used to take us to, I believe it's called, what, the Appalachian Art Center. We used to do some of that as kids in elementary school and middle school. But the thing about it is, you start doing it, and you start molding it, and guess what? Something cracks, something doesn't fit quite right. Sometimes you have to, you know, remove little pieces of it here and there to fine tune it, but sometimes you have to just take that clay and get it wet again and just completely start over. You see, that's what God was doing in the life of Abraham throughout all of this. God was taking these failures, taking these success, and just as a potter does with clay, he was molding Abraham as long as Abraham would let him mold him. And I believe that's exactly what God does with us. In Ephesians chapter 2, when it talks about how we're saved by grace through faith, not of works, lest any man should boast. If you go on down to around verse 10, he says you were created to be his masterpiece. That's his, in the Greek, it's this idea of his Picasso, to put it into our terms. And I think that correlates with Jeremiah 18, that God is this potter and he is molding us if we'll let him. And he uses the trials, he uses the tests to mold us into whom he wants to be. But you see, it all comes down to this one little word that I keep saying over and over again, trusting the potter. You see, it's this idea of I'm letting go of control of my life and giving him full control to mold me. You see, Abraham's faith was so strong at this point that Abraham said, you know what? Even if I go through with this, even if the Lord allows me to go through with this, I have so much faith in him that he will resurrect my son. He will resurrect him. Do you know why I know he'll resurrect him? Because God has promised me this child. And he promised me that by my descendants, the nations would be blessed. I find it even interesting in Genesis 22, the phraseology that Abraham does says, you know, let us go and we'll find, the Lord will provide the sacrifice. And he told those with them, me and my son will return. He said that knowing that his son was commanded, that he was commanded to give his son as the offering. But his faith was so strong, he said, I'm not only going to come back, but my son's coming back too. But you see, here's the thing about faith in this story that often gets overshadowed. There's two main characters in this story, Abraham and Isaac. And we focus on the faith of Abraham. And sometimes I think that overshadows the faith of Isaac. Not once in Genesis 22 do we read of Isaac fighting back. Not once in 22 do we see Isaac putting up a fight. I'm just telling you right now, my dad takes me out into the middle of the woods and starts tying me up. There's going to be some fighting back. I'm not going to allow anyone to just bind me up. So why? How could Isaac allow this? Because I think just as a spiritual leader in the home should, I believe Abraham prepared Isaac in the realm of trusting God. There's no other way that I can wrap my mind around it other than that. That just as Isaac had faith in his father, Isaac also had faith in the God of his father. We have a responsibility as older Christians, to prepare our children, our grandchildren, those younger or those newer in the faith, for the periods in their lives that the only thing they will have to hold on to are the promises of God. We say oftentimes that our children want immediately what their parents worked a lifetime to achieve. And we put all that burden on these kids, like, oh, they're entitled children. Well, guess what? Entitled children learn to be entitled from somewhere. I'm just going to say it. I deal with it all the time at work. I deal with these young 19-year-olds. It's their first time with a real job. And they expect us, you know, to skip being at the bottom and go straight to the top. I'm training some of them right now. About to pull my hair out some days, what little I got left. They had to learn it somewhere. And I think about it. I don't remember growing up hearing my parents ever talk about the struggles and how they got through it. Or how they would get through it. So when you don't teach your children how to struggle, or you don't teach your children that struggles are coming and how to get through struggles, don't be shocked when they grow up to be adults that don't know how to deal with struggle. Don't be shocked when we have a generation whose faith crumbles under every weight of this world because they've never been taught how to overcome it. James chapter 1, passage we're all familiar with, but I believe it's a passage that needs to be taught. I think it needs to be taught proactively in times of peace, times of good. Can I all join my brothers when you meet trials of various kinds? For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. He goes on to say in verse 12, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. Our children not only need to face trials, our younger, you know, not only does every individual need to face trials, but I believe every individual needs to be prepared. And when I say prepared, I'm not just talking about an internal preparation that I have to do, that I have to take responsibility for, but I'm also talking about an external preparation where more mature Christians need to do their part in helping prepare lesser mature Christians to face trials, to face the highs, to face the lows of life. And how do we do that? Oftentimes it's by sharing our stories. It's by sharing our experiences. And also, it's also done by not demeaning someone when they're going through their trials. I'm sure you've probably heard this before. Well, I went through that and I turned out just fine. Or, well, I went through much more than that. What do they got? You know what you just did? You demeaned somebody. You just said what they're going through is lesser than anything you've ever went through in your life. And maybe that's so, but I came to the realization of this a few years ago. What's heavy for me may not be heavy for you. What's heavy for you may not be heavy for me. I also came to this realization. If a man drowns in 6 foot of water and a man only drowns in 6 inches of water, guess what they both have in common? They both drowned. I don't think anybody would try to play the one-up game on that, right? Well, he drowned in six feet of water. He really had a struggle. That person over there drowned in 6 inches of water. Guess what? They're both drowning. They both need help. And I think oftentimes, sometimes we forget what it's like because we're in different stages of our spiritual journey, of our spiritual growth, and we forget what it's like to have been in that person's situation or in that person's spiritual level, I guess. Because I'm pretty sure some of you that have a faith that is stronger than even mine, it wasn't always that way. Wasn't always that way. So I believe we have a responsibility to train, to prepare those that are newer in their faith, those that are younger than us, our children, our grandchildren. I think we have a responsibility to prepare them for trials so that they can achieve that trust that Abraham has in Genesis 22. I think we have to remind them constantly of something in Hebrews 13. Hebrews 13, beginning with verse 5. Keep your life from love of money. Be content with what you have. For he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Just as God promised his faithfulness to Abraham, and just as when Abraham struggled, when Abraham fell short, God remained faithful. And I think that's a responsibility that we have to really instill in the lives of those around us. That even when moments seem dark and dreary and it's hard to trust, that God is in control and ultimately He is looking out for our greater good, and that this too shall pass, and that we can come out stronger than ever before from it. We have to remind people that we serve a God who Scripture says cannot tell a lie, and if He gives us His Word is as good as gold. And He has promised us that I'll never leave you nor forsake you. And so the Hebrew author says we need to learn to be content. It's kind of what Paul said in Philippians when he said, in whatever situation I've learned therefore to be content. And he talks about how he can do all things through Christ who strengthens him. Man, don't that look good on t-shirts? And didn't that look good when Tim Tebow would put that across his eyes? But the thing about it is we take this verse that's there to offer hope, and we take it and we manipulate it into this, you know, motivational sentence. But the honest truth is I can't do all things, right? I can put that all over a shirt, but it doesn't mean I'm going to be as good of a basketball player as Michael Jordan was. But I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. That's not what Paul's getting at. Paul's getting at this. I've learned to be content. I've been in situations where I've had a lot, where I've had this great abundance. I've been in situations where I've had nothing. But throughout all those situations, there's one thing that's never changed, and it's this idea of Jesus being with me. And I can get through all these situations in life through Jesus because that's my source of strength. And we see this faith in Isaac. We see this trust in Isaac. And I can't help but believe that that had to be instilled from somewhere, and it was instilled from his father. And we have a responsibility to instill that type of faith in others. Proverbs chapter 3, to kind of draw our minds to a close here. Another verse we're all familiar with, but man, there's a word in there that really just cuts deep. It's only three letters. Proverbs 3, beginning with verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all. Not some of it. Not just a small portion, all. I told Mark this morning, I said, you know, eating that bread while you're trying to preach was a lot easier than eating a chicken wing. And some of y'all are like, what are you talking about? I used to use an illustration of a chicken wing, and then I learned my lesson the hard way and almost choked and died while trying to preach. So then I would just have one that was not eaten, and I'd take one with me that I ate on the way there, you know, that was an empty bone. I used to use a chicken wing as an illustration of giving God our leftovers. And I would talk about my life, and I would talk about me being the center of it, and I would just take a bite, and I want to do this, and I take a bite, and I'm going to do this, and I take a bite, and I take a bite, and I take a bite, and I take a bite. And all that was left is, you know, I don't know about y'all, but I like the wings better than the drumsticks. I wish they'd give you all wings, not drumsticks. And those of you who are like, I like boneless, you like chicken nuggets. That ain't a chicken wing. That is a chicken nugget. Okay? But the part of the chicken, the drumstick that I don't like, and I see some people, I had a buddy in college that you couldn't eat chicken wings with him because you didn't know whether to be amazed or disgusted. I mean, he'd take those wings, he'd put the whole thing in his mouth, he'd just pull it out and it'd be bare. He'd take that drumstick and he'd put it in the side of his jaw and he'd give it three turns and it'd come out and there wasn't a piece of meat left on that thing. I'm telling you, you didn't know whether to be amazed or disgusted by it. But I don't like the very ends, the very top of the drumstick. Where like the tendons and stuff are. It's just the cartilage. It's just hard. I don't eat that. But I took that chicken wing that day. And I ate all the meat off of it that I liked. And I made sure it wasn't one that had sauce on it before I did this and made a mess. It was a dry, just fried, regular fried, nothing on it. And I took that chicken wing and I walked over to the side of the pulpit. I threw it in the middle of the auditorium, in the walkway. I said, there you go, God. Take what's left. Take what's left. Wait, you mean God's not pleased with that? I gave him something. All throughout Scripture, in many different avenues, we see that God's not pleased with our leftovers. So it should come by no surprise here when Solomon, in his infinite wisdom and inspiration, writes, trust in the Lord with all, not some. Give God all your heart. And don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, not just some of your ways, in all your ways, acknowledge Him. And He will make straight your paths. But you see, in order for Isaac to learn this, I go back to this because I want you to get this in your head. I want you to take this home with you. And I want you to really meditate on it. He had to learn it from somewhere. And where did Abraham learn it from? He learned it from those experiences, those highs, those lows, those successes, those struggles in life. That God is faithful. Trials aren't fun. They're not always easy. I'll be 33 in May. And when I say high blood pressure, I don't mean just really high. There's days where I'll go get my blood pressure checked, and I'm like 190, 200 over something. Yeah, I know. You're looking at me like, how's he not dead, right? Same thing, grace of God, I guess. They're like, you feel bad? I feel fine. They said, well, maybe you got white coat syndrome. So I got me a blood pressure cuff. I take it at home. Guess what? It ain't white coat syndrome or white coat syndrome. It's just high blood pressure. Try to be healthy. It's genetics. Runs in my family. My doctor looked at me about 8 months ago and he said, you know, it probably wouldn't kill you to step on a treadmill every once in a while. I don't know what you're talking about. Sounds like it'd kill me, doc. So 8 months ago I started, and I really started trying to get my heart rate up. I thought I was going to die. I thought I was never going to see any improvement in that, but I just kept telling myself, it's going to pay off one day. One day it's going to pay off. One day it's going to pay off. This morning, you know, my times are not impressive by no means when it comes to somebody that's fit and in shape when it comes to this stuff. But this morning I looked on my paper and I had to row 3,000 meters. And I thought, I'm going to die. I rowed 3,000 meters 8 months later quicker than I rowed 2,000 meters 8 months earlier. I say that to illustrate and say, if we push through the trials, we come out on the other side stronger. If we take these tools of understanding the purpose of trials, of understanding the promises of God that He'll never leave us nor forsake us, understanding that if we trust in Him with all of our heart and we don't lean on our own understanding, and in all of our ways we acknowledge Him, He'll direct, He'll guide our paths, He'll take care of us through the journey, we will come out on the other side with the Genesis 22 faith. Tonight, if you're not a Christian and you need to respond and you need to put Christ on in baptism, wanting to give Him your trust, your faith in Him with your soul, we want to take care of that. If you're struggling, we don't want to belittle your struggles. We don't want to demean you for having struggles because you're human. But what we want to do is maybe we want to pray for you. We want to point you in the direction of the One who has the infinite wisdom to guide your paths. But also we want to share with you from our experiences how you can be stronger because of it. But if you have a spiritual need and that needs to be addressed tonight, we want to take care of that. If you want to come while we offer this invitation song, please come while we stand and while we sing.